Welcome to the LeanZone.com podcast, where we discuss construction contracts, liens, and bonds. And now, our host, Alex Barthet.
My name is Alex Barthet. I'm a construction lawyer in Miami. So today we're going to talk about what is the Miller Act, how to file a Miller Act claim on federal projects. We'll talk about Florida public bonded projects, what to file and when, and then how to avoid some of the most common traps that we see on a regular basis. What is the Miller Act and how does it work? If you work on projects where the property is owned by the federal government, you may have a right to be paid under the Miller Act, which is similar to the lien and bond laws in most states. What it allows you to do is make a claim against the bonded contractor to ensure that you get paid. Again, it applies to work done by you on property that's owned by the federal government. Not all jobs are bonded. So in order to get rights, the project has to be in excess of $100,000. So jobs on federal projects that are less than $100,000 are not likely bonded. So what do you have to do? The first thing you have to do is understand whether or not you have rights under Miller Act. So if you are the prime contract, meaning you have a contract with federal government, your claim is against the public entity. So who is able to make claims under the Miller Act? If you have a contract with the prime contractor, your claim is against the prime contractor's bond. So you would be a first-tier subcontractor. If you are a material supplier to the prime contractor, you would have rights under the prime contractor's payment bond under the Miller Act. Second-tier subcontractors and material suppliers are able to make claims as well. So a subcontractor can make a claim. A material supplier to a subcontractor can make a claim as well. So those that have contracts with subcontractors are entitled to make claims under the Miller Act. Once you determine that you have rights under the Miller Act, the question is, what do you do? If you are a first-tier subcontractor, meaning you have a contract with the prime contractor, you need not send a Miller Act notice or notice of non-payment, but you should because it will allow the contractor to know that you intend to make a claim under their bond. Second-tier subcontractors and material suppliers to those prime contractors need to send a bond claim, which is a notice of non-payment within 90 days of their last work on the job. So if you are a second-tier sub or you are a material supplier to that subcontractor, you need to send this notice of non-payment. Understand that there are no rights to suppliers. If you're a supplier and you're providing materials to another supplier, you have no rights under the Miller Act. Notice of non-payment must state the amount that you're owed at the time you make the claim. As well, you should include who you contracted with. That'll give the contractor an opportunity to determine whether or not they've in fact paid that party. Service is via certified mail, and return receipt is requested because in order for you to determine whether or not you've made the claim, you need to make sure that you can prove that it was timely sent. While you may not get the green card back if it's rejected, proof that you attempted to serve it is critical. You should send a copy of the notice of non-payment to the surety and any other party that you contracted. Filing suit is done within no later than 1 year, but interestingly, it cannot be done sooner than 90 days after your last work. As long as you're within that window, you can file suit. Any claims after 1 year are automatically extinguished. But let's talk about how to assert a claim against a public project in the state of Florida. In Florida, there's a statute that requires that jobs that are done on public property must be bonded. The threshold for those bond claims is projects in excess of $100,000. If the job is between $200,000 and $400,000, the municipality or governing agency can determine whether or not they want the bond on the job, and anything less than $200,000 does not need a bond. Understand that the FDOT, Florida Department of Transportation, has their own statute that governs road building, and those rules are similar but slightly different to the rules we're about to describe. So don't assume that claims asserted under the FDOT for FDOT work are identical to what we're going to talk about. So first you need to determine whether or not you're protected under Chapter 255.5, the public bond statute. Prime contractors, those that have a contract with the municipality or agency, must bring a claim against those agencies directly. First-tier subcontractors and material suppliers to prime contractors are able to make a claim under the prime contractor's bond. Second tier subcontractors and material suppliers make claims as well. So those would be subcontractors and material suppliers to subcontractors. The last tier of folks that are entitled to make claims under 255.05 are suppliers to subcontractors.
This episode is brought to you by the Miami Construction Forum. This invitation-only group of construction professionals of all sizes and trades meets monthly for an informal lunch-and-learn session on current topics of interest, from getting paid and safety to bonding and insurance. To see the upcoming topics and request your invitation, visit MiamiConstructionForum.com.
So how do you perfect your rights under Chapter 255.05? So the first step is to send what is called to contract. It's the preliminary notice, similar to a notice to owner. First-tier subcontractors and material suppliers don't need to send this notice. That is, those that have a direct contract with the bonded contractor are not obligated to send this notice. However, I would highly encourage that you do that to let the contractor know that you intend to assert your rights. Second-tier subcontractors and material suppliers need to send this notice to contractor within 45 days of their first work delivery of materials to the project. Understand that a bonded prime contractor knows about their first-tier subs and material suppliers, but won't know about anyone beyond them. That is the purpose of sending the notice to contractor, to let them know that these folks are on the job. They are going to look to that bonded contractor's bond in order to get paid. As with the Miller Act, service via certified mail return receipt is the most common and preferred method of giving service under the statute. And while it's not required, it is strongly recommended that you send a copy of the notice to contractor to the surety and the party that you contract. When you use Sunray to do your notices, whether it's a notice to owner or notice to contractor, they will make sure that it gets to all the right people based on the information on the bond and that which is provided to them. So the third step in protecting your rights on a public project in the state of Florida is if you have a contract with the prime contractor, you don't need to send a notice of non-payment, but you should. All other claimants must send a notice of non-payment to the bonded prime contractor within 90 days of their last work. So let me go over that first part. In any instances, as an example, the Miller Act, even if you have a contract with the bonded prime contractor, you need to send this notice of non-payment within 90 days. But under Chapter 255.05, even if you haven't been paid, this notice of non-payment within 90 days of your last work is not required. But again, I would strongly encourage that you do send the notice of non-payment within 90 days of your last work, even if you have a contract with a bonded contractor. The notice must send a state the amount that you're owed, and who you had a contract with, and again, service via certified mail, return receipt requested, will satisfy the requirements under the statute. If the Miller Act, while it's not required to send a copy to the surety, it is strongly recommended that you send a copy to them and anyone else that you are aware of on the project that is above you. So then the last step is to file suit. And you need to do that within 1 year of your last work delivery of materials on the project. If you have a claim solely for retainage, you are able to bring that claim later than 1 year. There are certain rules and notices that have to be provided, but understand that if all you are owed is retainage, you have slightly longer than 1 year from the last work. If you have $1 of non-retainage amounts that are due, whether it's for change order or other base contract work, then you need to bring the entire claim within 1 year of your last work. So let's talk about some common traps that we see on a regular basis. Number one, don't wait until the last minute to send your notice or to suit. It takes time, both for Sunray and our office when we are hired to file the lawsuit, to prepare the paperwork and get it filed and served. Waiting until the 85th day is a problem if you're going to send your notice. You should try to do it much sooner. Don't wait until a few days before the 1 year expires. Give yourself and those that you work with ample time to process the paperwork. Second, just because you have bond rights doesn't mean that you should ignore other ways to limit your credit risk. So if you are a supply house, even if you have bond rights, to the extent that this job and the party you're contracting with can provide other security, should do that. So as an example, material suppliers may routinely get personal guarantees or other types of guarantees in order to sell on credit. Just because a job is bonded doesn't mean you should ignore those other ways to secure your right to be paid. Subcontractors, one of the things that we recommend in order to overcome certain credit risks is inserting in your contracts the ability to limit the right to or the obligation to continue working if you haven't been paid. This deals primarily with pay when paid issues, but if you're not being paid on the job and you have to continue, that could be tremendously problematic. So if you can include in your contract the right to stop work, slow work, if you haven't been paid, that can go a long way at limiting your credit risk. And finally, look for subcontractor bonds. So as an example, if you are a subcontractor on a state or federal project, in addition to your rights that you may have against the bonded prime contractor, if the party that you had a contract with, subcontractor, also got a payment and performance bond, which is not uncommon, you would have rights under that bond as well. The party that will likely let you know whether or not that subcontractor that you have a contract with has a bond is the bonded prime contractor. The reason is that they would prefer that if there were an issue that you would go after the subcontractor's bond rather than theirs. In order to perfect your rights against the subcontractor's bond, you need to get a copy of it and ensure that you comply with the notice requirements that are in terms of that payment bond that the subcontractor has.
Thanks for listening to the LeanZone.com podcast. You can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or in your favorite podcast app. For articles, videos, and forums on this and other construction topics, head over to the LeanZone.com.